Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and today I have two great guests. They're actually a husband and wife team, and I had the honor of actually going to one of their meetings, and it was quite interesting, so I thought that the listeners would probably enjoy what they have to talk about. So I'm going to bring them on right away. It is Robin and Joseph, so welcome to the show.
Yeah.
We're here.
Okay. Say hello.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy.
So, Robin, why don't you start and tell the listeners a little bit about who Robin is, and then Joseph, after she's done, we're going to have you do the same thing so that the listeners understand what the two of you are trying to do. So, Robin, go ahead, please.
Great. Thanks. Well, my journey has been probably like a lot of people that felt that they were feeling things and seeing things that just didn't make sense to the regular status quo. And I was in 20 years ago following my path to be a social worker and a counselor. And in 1990, I had a near-death experience that completely changed my life. And from that moment on, I knew that there was so much more to understand about life than what I had been conditioned to believe with my parents. And I had a psychologist father, high intellects as parents, and really had not understood the power of the soul and the love of God and the love of all that is to direct my life. And from that near-death experience, I went to a space that showed me that my soul actually created my life, created my reality, created my choice to be with the parents that I chose. They were a perfect reflection of my life and what I needed to see in my eternal self. So that just started an immense integration of profound gifts and multidimensional understanding that I had past lives. And through this one initiation, I just developed a strategy of really helping people heal, because I was really understanding how I had to heal myself to come into the greater aspects of my being, to really learn how to love. And when... Oh, you want me to share what?
I think that's perfect.
Okay. Well, one of the most powerful things about the experience is when I left my body, I went to what some people now have defined the void. Some people have called it... the presence of the unified field. People have defined, different folks I've talked to, in all sorts of different ways. What I experienced was the unified mother, father, God embracing me completely. This love that I experienced was so deep in my being that I just wanted to hang out there. And like many people, when we go through a doorway of death, hey, let's get out of this body. This feels so much better. Life's a struggle. As I was sitting in this love, I said, I just want to stay here. And a source said to me, well, you can. And I said, you mean I have a choice? And source said, absolutely. Everybody chooses their life, their death, and how that flows, and which was stunning to me. The fact that I was having a conversation and I wasn't in my body was stunning to me. And then I said, well, I want to keep this feeling going all the time. I don't want to go back in a body. It's, horrible. And what I was shown is that I can have this kind of love while I'm in a body. And I said, how? Absolutely commit to loving yourself in every moment. And I said, oh, that's it? Just loving yourself, that's all it is? And Source said, well, yes, and that means your eternal soul. Well, I took a breath, and I came back into my body, and Source said, you better make a choice soon, because pretty soon you won't have a choice. Your body's not going to make it. And I was electrocuted was what has happened. Mm-hmm. And as I took that breath into my body and I opened my eyes, there was a medic working on me, and boy, was he cute. I said, hello. Am I glad to be here? And from that moment on, I knew that my path was really to learn what love means. Not just as the things that I liked about myself, but how to love all the aspects of my life that I had judged, my parents, my history, and all the things that I found unlovable. And that really started my path of healing the shadow and bringing the shadow and the light together.
Robin, why do you think so many people have such a hard time learning to love themselves?
Well, that's a beautiful question, Nancy. And I think it's mostly because we're looking for an ideal that defines love other than what's happening. And so when we hold conditioned ideals, whether they're from religion or the way we're parented, or perhaps from even past life memories of following a particular meditation path, when we hold a specific concept of what love is, we don't allow acceptance of the emotional experiences that we're going through to be lovable. We start to deny that certain emotions are not love. And what we were shown over and over since I met Joseph is how every emotional experience is actually part of love. And so many people are taught that fear is a polar opposite of love, and we're uncovering that, no, that's not true at all. There is no opposite to love. So I think it's so hard for people to grasp love of self, because it means that your beingness needs to be completely present in every experience and accept what's happening, whether it's deep pain or rage or fear or joy or ecstasy. And those ideals and those judgments about what's good and what's bad keep us from being able to do that.
And people have a hard time with that. Okay, now, Joseph, it's your turn. We're going to let you do a little bit of talking. So, Joseph, explain a little bit about who Joseph is and how you got on your journey.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, Nancy. From very early as I can remember, I started having what one would consider strange experiences. I had materializations. I had energy pulsing through my body, strange visions. And I was raised in a typical Catholic model. And even though I don't think I ever talked to my dad about it, but I talked to my mom, and my mom was supportive in her own way. And I found out much later that she had been a psychic and had shut down her gifts because of, she was just terror, you know, total terror by what she had seen, because she would see the future and it would come true. So she shut it down. So she supported me in a way without really acknowledging at that time in my life that what I was experiencing was real. She always let me know that the possibilities were there. And, of course, I'd go to the priests and the nuns and try to explain what was happening to me, and they acted pretty clueless and would just tell me, well, that's the grace of God. And, of course, it didn't mean anything to me. And the funny thing is now they were probably right. But I really don't think they knew what it really meant. Maybe they did, but they weren't telling me. So I went on a path of trial and error and exploration, and there weren't many metaphysical bookstores in those days. There were mostly occult bookstores. And so I just had to follow my own guidance and whatever I could find, and started working and healing with people in my late teens. And then finally ended up in Los Angeles to do my master's work in architecture. And that's when I was like a kid in a candy store there. It's just like the psychic capital of the world. And it really rocketed me onto into my psychic abilities and my understandings of looking at the universe in a little different way. And what I would do is I had, like, you know, straight jobs. I was an architect, and I started an architecture company and construction management company and built a lot of schools. But in the evenings and on the weekends, I would run workshops. I'd run men's groups and crystal healing groups, and I'd teach people about energies and different colors and things like that and how to use them. But I never combined the two. And finally, one day, after I kind of had it with my businesses and I was really burned out, I was sitting on the couch in my studio in Santa Monica, and I heard a voice, and I'm not clairaudient, but I heard a voice that said, "Move to Santa Fe." And I went, "What?" And so I kind of said, well, maybe I didn't really hear that, and the person I was with didn't hear it either. So I said, well, if this is true, then this, and this will happen. And, you know, I made them, like, really far-out, hard things that would never happen, and, of course, they happened. So I said, all right, I'm moving to Santa Fe, and I knew really one person here, and I packed up my bags and stopped my businesses and left and came here and didn't know what I was going to do here. I thought I was coming here. I was tricked by the universe. I thought I was coming here to start a couple businesses, but as soon as I got here, within a week, everything fell through, and I was sitting in my studio, and a mutual friend, the only person I knew here, said I should. There's somebody I should meet, and she introduced me to Robin, and then all heck broke loose from there.
Isn't it funny how the guides have this way of making you go where you want to go, even if you have no clue what the outcome may be?
Kicking and screaming.
All the way. I know how that works. Now, Joseph, you also, you know, you talked about forming men's groups. And I know that there are a lot of men, and I'm not picking on anybody, but I know there are a lot of men who really are very afraid of emotions, let alone to get into the psychic realm of everything. So how difficult was it to get men to understand that it's okay?
Well, it's pretty funny. I would start about 2 weeks ahead. I tried to have a weekly men's group, and I'd start calling people about the 2 weeks ahead, you know, that are you going to come? And then in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, I would do my final round of phone calls for the groups that would start at 5:30. And, you know, I had a list of between 15 and 20 people, and I'd call everybody. And I'd usually get about 80% who said they'd show up. And I'd usually get 4 or 5 people. So, I mean, even at the last minute, people were saying, yeah, I want to do it. But the resistance was so great that I had a tough time getting people to show up. And about the feelings, well, it's, how can I say this?
Just say it.
You know, it's different to look at things from a male or female experience necessarily. We're programmed in certain ways to show up and to be men in a particular way or to have success. And then to you know, not be a man is to, you know, in our society has been in the past, to not show our emotions and to do all that. So, you know, when I was doing it in the 80s in L.A. and through the early 90s, we were still at a particularly tough stress point of showing men that it was okay. And there are a lot of programs out there and a lot of incredible, you know, men's groups now that show us that the power of being a man is actually through our emotions. And it's getting in touch with them and being able to move in a powerful way as a man in unity with both sides of us, if you will, the male and female. It's not a matter of putting one to the fore. It's more a matter of coupling within and understanding how our emotional nature is actually the way through to deal with our issues and our problems that we have to face out there.
Yeah, I find that men have a very hard time sometimes allowing themselves to be real because they have that idea that they have to be this man. And that means you're not supposed to feel, you're not supposed to show emotions, and you're, of course, not supposed to cry. But that's taken away all of the energy from your soul, in my opinion. So do you find that to be true?
Well, that's been the experience in the conditioning.
And there's literally structures that you pull together.
Yeah. Well, we found, it's a good intro into some of the things that we do. We find that there are literally physical structures sometimes that we assume we bring them in genetically. They're put on through conditioning of our society. It's wherever we have a weakness or a propensity to not feel or to be in some kind of a denied emotion, where a structure or sometimes an entity or a being of some kind that we ask consciously or unconsciously to come into, to give us more strength or power or whatever it is, that they'll come in and literally take over a part of us. And what we're empowering people to do is take personal responsibility for understanding how their emotions are creating their realities and allowing these parts to be lifted so that they can bring back the two parts of self that they cast off either this lifetime or in the previous lifetime that they brought in.
So in other words, Nancy, what Joseph's describing is that the men that are really suppressed emotionally usually have physically, viscerally held suppression energetics on their bodies, and usually on their inner feminine or on their inner children. And whenever we have been told that we can't be in our power and be in our feelings, we have to deny a whole side of ourselves. And that is a physical structure that Joseph actually removes when people come in for healing work. Because it's the denied emotions that actually create disease. It's denied emotions that attract things to us that we don't want to create. If we can't love our fear and can't get real, we can't heal it. And so we keep creating it over and over again because the soul is trying to get us whole. It's trying to move into wholeness. So the male energy archetypically has been split from its own feminine. Or if a man is in touch with his feminine, he starts cutting off his male. So we've been swinging back and forth and back and forth, and finally, I really believe with all of my heart, the biggest step we're taking now as human beings is synergizing our male-female into balance, mm-hmm. where we're not going to be dominated by the male and the female's not going to dominate, and we're going to have a whole new synergistic creation energy that we can access inside, and then that makes it possible to have lovers in your life that you can actually work things out with.
What Robin's referring to is we're firm believers or experiencers of, as we change our internal relationships, our external relationships will mirror that.
A lot of people that I have talked with always look for the outside, you know, to make things work or to get answers. And in reality, it truly is an inside job. Do you find that to be true, either one of you?
I have a little bit of a story there. When I started channeling back right after I had my near-death experience, my crown chakra was blown open, so I could channel anything and everything and didn't have a lot of discernment at first. But the biggest principle that has stayed with me is that everything we bring to us in all of our relations is showing us a part of our soul. Well, I would fight tooth and nail about that, especially when I met Joseph and he showed up judging me. I was like, what? How can this be a part of me? And it was absolutely 100% true that whenever I was in separation from my husband and there was something he was showing me that I just could not stand, I always found it inside of myself, and I would just bite my nails, and going, it can't be. And sure enough, I'd do the inner work and let guidance take me down into the body, and I would call and invoke any part of my soul that I hadn't been able to love, and I would meet a warrior that never could surrender and learn to love his body because he was asked to sacrifice and thought he just had to push through. I would meet soul parts that I had no idea were part of my being that Joseph was showing me. And the moment I'd start to integrate them and work with them and heal them, our relationship would shift automatically. The judgment that I was feeling towards who he was showing himself to be shifted immediately. I was able to bring him into love as a part of myself. The true meaning of oneness started making sense on a deep emotional level and a physical level. And that's the deepest part of our work, really, is to see how every relationship is the catalyst and the doorway to create wholeness in the soul. And most people don't understand how that works.
No, they don't, because they keep asking the same questions over and over again, looking for that outside answer. So the work that the two of you are doing is actually very important. Joseph, I have a question for you. On your bio, you talk about how you do dimensional DNA healings. Now, a lot of talk that's going on right now is that many people's DNA is being changed. So can you explain a little bit about dimensional DNA and then how you use it for the healings that you're doing?
Sure. One of the things that we're understanding is that planet Earth, at least this is what we're told, and we haven't been told differently yet, but what we're being told is the planet Earth is the most powerful place in the universe right now for the integration of all of the races together. It's literally the melting pot in the universe where the races can, we see it literally in the different kind of races that we have on the planet. but also it's the melding of the human, galactic, angelic, and everything else that's out there right now. This is the place where it can all happen. I see us in our next step of evolution as becoming galactic ambassadors. We're taking our humanness and going out into the universe dimensionally and probably physically as well. To do so, I have recognized, and Robin and I have talked about this a lot and checked in with our guidance to feel into it, that we are not replacing our carbon-based DNA with silica-based DNA, which a lot of people are talking about, like the quartz crystals structure. But we're actually melding the two together so that as we become galactic ambassadors, we take our humanness out there. At this kind of what some people would consider dross level, the lowest level of solidity and density, as opposed, you know, it's one of the denser, if not the densest level, where we work with our consciousness here to recreate ourselves from the inside out, as you mentioned. As we restructure our DNA and allow our physical body to manifest the internal changes that we're making, it makes us more ready to be those ambassadors that we feel that we are, really.
Yeah, I think it's important that people understand that there is a shift. And some people will probably make it easily, and some people will go probably kicking and screaming, and some people may not go at all. And no matter what their journey is, you know, they, in my opinion, have to understand that they still have to do their own work, but based upon their choices, it's what's going to make them really do their own work or not. So,
you know, Nancy, there's another thing I'd like to say that I think is an integral part of our work. We don't like to call ourselves healers, even though we can heal. I mean, I've gone through that routine of taking people's headaches away and doing this and that. And we don't consider ourselves light workers per se either. We consider ourselves light and dark workers because we feel that holding the light and going through the shadow is the way to self-empowerment. But the point that I would like to make is what we do is we hold a space for people to move into where they become their own healers. And I think that's a real major distinction from what some other people are doing, at least. When Robin mentioned I take structures away, well, yeah, I can do that. But, you know, if I just go and take somebody's structure away, it won't stick. You know, their consciousness, if they don't shift their consciousness and take responsibility for bringing in the structure or the entity or the possession or whatever it is in the first place, there's no reason why it won't come back. And so what we do is we hold the space for people to move into their own healing. We consider ourselves healing facilitators. And we hold the space for them to go and to go through the discreation process, to own why they brought something to them, and then to recreate in their lives what it is that they really want to have. And that's where the sustainable love idea came from. We were bantering around, you know, what are we going to call this work? Because we really don't know what to call it. And sustainability kept coming up because, you know, as an architect, I see everything architecturally. I see the body systems. I see the earth. I see the universe. I see, you know, consciousness as an architectural structure where there are systems that are going on and they're interrelating and they're co-creating with one another in a synergistic way that couldn't possibly happen independently. So, you know, what we're asking people to do is to, if they've brought something in that isn't serving them anymore, if it's a structure or an entity or something that shows up in their life as, I don't know, bad luck or disease or whatever it is, you know, bad, you know, relationships that aren't working for them, we look to the core cause, which we both do when Robin shifts into her trans-dimensional self and I follow along dimensionally. We both see, well, I see dimensionally and she hears dimensionally. We go and we find the core cause and we bring the core cause present to the client, to the person that we're working with, and then ask them if this feels real to them. Does this feel real? Ask questions while you're going along. We go through a gift creation process where they can move into ownership of why they created what they've created in their life. When we release something, we can break it into its finest or adamantine parts and bring those parts back in a sustainable way into the body to recreate through love what it is that they want to have in their life. And if we remove an entity or a possession, what we'll bring in a lot of times are soul parts that have been jettisoned for one reason or another, that somebody is consciously or unconsciously through some sort of traumatic event in their life or past life or, well, they're really parallel lives, that they've let go of. We can then bring those parts back in and then engage the person in it's a conscious soul retrieval. We engage them in a reintegration of that part into their body.
Well, again, I think it's real important because I don't think that people realize the magnitude of what their soul has gone through in all the different parallel lives. And I was going to have you explain parallel lives because that's a new thing that I think people are just starting to recognize. So, you know, they always go back to past lives, but I don't believe they're really past. I believe they're all parallel. So
all happening now.
In all different ways. So can you explain maybe to the listeners, and either one of you can do this, about parallel lives, because I'm not sure that people really understand it just yet.
Okay. Well, I've just talked a lot. Do you want to talk, Rose?
Well, I think there's a... Yeah, I can share a little bit about that.
I'm only going to speak about it architecturally, so Robin will give it another shot.
Well, in different experiences of channeling, one of the pieces of wisdom that has come through with Yahshua and Magdalene, known as Jesus and Mary Magdalene, we've uncovered that they were divine partners and they activated incredible amounts of wisdom for this planet through their union. During those times, there was information coming through about the soul being existing simultaneously in many, many forms. And that what it seems to us as a human being to be past is actually in a sphere of reality happening simultaneously. And in that understanding, it takes you out of the mind of thinking there's a past, present, and future, and it brings you into an understanding that the soul actually can be present in many forms simultaneously, which is hard to imagine mentally, but you can feel through the sacred heart. So when you have an experience that you're existing in another form, and you call the work, we call the work multidimensional because all of a sudden you're being affected by an experience that's not in this conscious physical reality, and you're responding in your life from that point of view because it's emotionally present in your being and it doesn't necessarily make logical sense. So a parallel experience will have a whole lot of charge to it. So if you're, let's say, in a parallel life, have had horrible experiences of speaking your truth and then being beaten or somehow been brutalized or annihilated, your body could actually carry a major charge and terror every time you get close to speaking your emotional truth in this present time with your partner. And it may not even be a violation that happened in this life. So the capacity to actually get in the body and feel all these sensations is where you can access the way to heal these parallel experiences. I have found, however, Nancy, that every parallel consciousness, past life, however you want to define it, soul energy is also being represented in the inner child. And almost this life, almost every inner child experience usually has a multidimensional component to it. And inner child dialogue work often takes us to past lives, to other times you were with your parents, to vows and contracts you made with your mother or your dad that said, you know, well, I'm going to get you this time, or, you know, and these understandings help the inner child heal, which then brings a level of safety and security to the person this life when you can see the multidimensional nature of the child's drama that was actually chosen by the soul. So we do a lot of connecting the dots there in our healing work.
A lot of people are under the impression that they have nothing to do with what's going on with their life in the present time, let alone what may have gone on in other times, because one of the things Joseph said was taking responsibility, and a lot of people really don't want to take responsibility, because then to take responsibility means that they would have to make some kind of a change.
And, yeah.
You know, and people have a hard time with that. So, you know, between, you know, trying to figure out, you know, the heart love, and I call it the heart smart part, because that's where it really comes from, and somebody's logic mind, which is, now that wasn't my fault, nope, that they did it then, they did it now, and on and on and on. So through the two of you working with somebody, how do you help the person take that responsibility? How do you help them to say, well, yeah, it was my fault?
Well, I think just that one question of is it whose fault is it is probably the biggest confusion that keeps people from being able to go into the healing work. In this whole notion that we create our own reality, there's also been a lot of self-judgment and blame that comes with that. Well, why the hell would I want to create that is what the attitude often is. Why do I want to go on that journey and figure out that I chose that? If you're going to hold a lot of judgment about yourself and what you uncover, it's very difficult to take responsibility for it. It's very difficult to uncover how your consciousness is bringing it to you. So the first thing that we do is in explaining how to take responsibility, we help people understand that you have to have an attitude of love and compassion, and even if you're struggling with that, to make that your intent. Because without that intent, you won't be able to be honest with yourself because it's too painful. If I'm going to figure out that I, you know, slaughtered my children my last lifetime, and I'm here to try to create healing for that this lifetime, why would I want to remember that if I'm just going to beat myself up for it?
You know, Nancy, there's from an esoteric or an energetic standpoint, what we create is we create a safe place for people to move into a place of vulnerability. That just isn't available to most people most of the time, particularly working in a corporate environment or being in an abusive family situation or whatever it is. And so we make it very clear energetically, you know, it's, and once again, it's one of those sort of non-tangibles. It's something that people feel and don't know why. And it's always a mystery and magic to us, too, why people open up. Or sometimes they'll just come in and they'll sit on the couch or they'll lay down on our futon and they'll start bawling. They'll cry and they'll cry and they'll cry, and they'll get to the deepest soul vibration of what it is that has been troubling them all their life, all their lives. And, you know, once again, this is a magic and a mystery when we do a session. We work with a blank slate. We don't have a set format. We tune in psychically to where someone's at, and we create a field, a sphere, a paradigm for them to walk into. And then that's when the magic occurs.
And Nancy, just to be bold, Joseph, I'm going to compliment you.
Nope.
Because to me, what I watch, from particularly when I'm channeling my God essence, it's the ability that Joseph has had to love the shadow, and that I have in my personality, my soul, to love the most painful parts of our lives that we've had to heal. You know, we both have had some pretty horrendous abuse experiences that we denied until we met each other. And because we've integrated those, because we've really been vulnerable and opened up there, and we tell our clients about it, we create a space of love for those parts of ourselves. So we have a principle. If somebody is going to walk into our door, the first piece of work we have to do is ask the God in ourselves, who is that person in us that we need to love now and completely own in the oneness? So it's not a hierarchy healing process that we've got the answers and, you know, you're just somebody that needs to get mixed.
Everybody comes in with the answers.
Yeah.
It's just up to us to help them uncover them.
Mm-hmm. It's a different way to work, because to own that somebody is a part of your own soul reflection as a client, it takes the therapist-client hierarchy fixer-healer, you know, helper-helpee out of it. And it's extremely vulnerable for us, but we don't want to work any other way.
No, and because of that, we're constantly doing our work.
Our personal work.
Our personal work. It's constant, and we drag our kids along with it.
Well, our kids now, we are choosing and asking us for healing when they get stuck, and it's beautiful.
That's
we
great.
Have a 7-year-old that's cleaned up from any kind of drug use or emotional stress and problems. He's done session work with some team members of ours and myself when I'm in channel.
He even thanked me a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't believe it, for the fact that we don't have cable or TV in the house so that he wouldn't be distracted by the media.
Yeah,
I would fell over.
They have a way of doing things like that. The media does. I do have a question for you, Robin. How important is music and dance in the work for the healing?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. Well, when I was very young, I just naturally danced around and made up songs all the time, and it was just very creative. And then I trained as a professional dancer and an actress for a while. And then when I had my near-death experience, it's almost like I left that life.
Well, it happened at a dance.
Yeah, I was doing a performance piece outdoors on Earth Day, and I stepped on a live cable that was hooked up to the amphitheater. But I was, that's another story. That's more of the other story. But when people come in to do healing work and move their bodies, the only way I've been able to support people to really understand what's going on physically is to physically move their bodies. And if people can't physically express the feelings and the sounds that want to come through, the emotional energy doesn't move. And if emotional energy doesn't move, your life force is stagnant. So I sing to people. I sing their soul songs. Languages have come through me for probably 20 years. And some people have called them the star ancient languages of the earth. I believe them to be ancient languages of the original humans that were here, that are now in the inner earth and are helping us heal, do a lot of healing work. And there are also different galactic languages, but I sometimes will create songs with English, too, for people. And then I invite others to sing, and I invite others to dance their soul journeys. That's a particular experience that we do in retreats more than I do in the private work, even though in private work sometimes people get up and move and express physically that way as well. So I use it when it's really needed, to help people move a lot of energy.
The sound, however it is, and we have people make their own sound a lot, the sound catalyzes a lot of the issues and the deep kind of lost, untouched vibrations at the cellular level, all the way right through the nervous system and down. You actually, you know, sometimes I see it down into the DNA. Sort of like a wiggling and an empathetic or sympathetic vibration that creates a pinging. You know, it's a ping that wakes up the body at another level that it hasn't been awakened to in a long time or maybe forever. And then, once again, that's another way that people can release trauma or whatever it is they're holding in their body.
Now, before we run out of time, I want you guys to give out your website and how the listeners can get a hold of you and let them know if it can be done by phone or if it always has to be done in person.
Okay. Well, we just got a website up and a couple days ago. We've been working together for 10 years, and we've just now been able to focus on a particular way that we want to take our work out into the world. So it required a new name and a website to support that. So that is sustainablelove, one word, .biz. So it's www.sustainablelove.biz. And on the website, there are three different ways to contact us. It's either info@sustainablelove.biz, joseph@sustainablelove.biz, or robin@sustainablelove.biz. Or you can use one of our phones. You can contact Robin's phone directly, which we're in Santa Fe. The number is 505-920-3838.
And Joseph and I often do long-distance healings with people over the phone. We have had clients all over the world.
And it's interesting, too, because we bring people in, and we've you know, we have some long-term clients, and I asked one of them, actually two of them, independently, there was a couple who were coming here, and they stayed with us and did some work, and I said, what's the difference when we work with you on the phone or when we work with you in person? And they both said independently, there's no difference. And it shocked me. I was actually surprised. Now, what we did was we had, because they're a couple, we had them support each other physically. Mm-hmm. So they were
doing energy work.
Doing energy work, and
yeah,
they would put their hands on, and they would. I can see them psychically. We can both see them psychically, so we can run energy through. But it's, to have a physical body there is a little bit different spin, you know. So it really helps. But that was kind of a shock to me. So the long distance work works. Because, well, there is no time or space, is there?
No, there isn't, because energy is energy. The other thing that I'd like to ask you, Joseph, now, you have helped different people who have got high-level trauma victims involving ritual satanic abuse and governmental abductions and things like that.
Yes.
For the satanic abuse, now, because we don't hear a lot about that anymore. So can you maybe explain to our listeners, kind of briefly, because I got a couple more questions, about what the satanic abuse is and how often is it going on now?
Well, I really don't know how prevalent it is. All I know is that because of the vibration that Robin and I hold for deep trauma work, we seem to attract people who have gone through that. And there seems to be little difference between ritual satanic abuse, government abductions, some types of alien abductions, and other forms like that. What our experience has been, and we've worked with individuals and families, is generally the ritual satanic abuse seems to be held within the family system. There seems to be a religious overtone of some kind, where there's a religious outpicturing that this is what's happening during the day, and then at night it takes another spin, it takes another tone, where it's turned into what we call the dark side of what the organized religion would look like. I don't know what do you want to add, Robin? I know you want to add something.
Well, there's a lot of details that are very gory and horrific to describe, but I think more importantly is understanding that when a soul is ready to heal that level of trauma, when they come to us, it's not just the trauma from the experiences that they have to heal. They have to be willing to see what their soul is trying to heal in themselves, mm-hmm. and why they chose that lineage to go through that kind of a high level of suffering and fragmentation. There's usually an amazing punishment piece, incredible amounts of guilt and shame about other lifetimes, so they feel they have to come in and experience that kind of high-level torture. And it almost always starts as in infancy. And the main proponent, or the main, a lot of people have attached this understanding to the reptilian race lines that have been on the planet for a long, long time, that have tried to make sure that human beings don't feel safe in their bodies. And the best way to do that is to violate the first and second chakras. And
yeah,
that's where, when you can't open there, you can't feel safe on Mother Earth. And so you're pretty much out of your body most of the time. And when you're out of your body most of the time, that's when the galactic abduction, you're very vulnerable to that. And when you can be manipulated by governmental, trainings.
Mm-hmm. That's a pleasant way to say it.
Yeah, we because, like I said, the patterning, a number of people have said this before, the effect on the body and the psyche of a rape is very similar to that of what one would perceive to be an alien abduction. Whether people are really being abducted by aliens, it's difficult to know, but it doesn't really matter to us. What matters more is how we deal with the trauma in the body, you know, because that's what we can deal with. We see, you know, once again, like I've mentioned, we have worked with governmental abductions, And some people who come to us, because we've made the intention of magnetizing the people to us who can have the most immediate effect on the planet. In other words,
for wholeness and healing.
For wholeness and healing. So what we're looking for are people who we can work with, and then they can go out and affect a great deal of people. So we bring in people a lot of times who are recognized from a frequency level by the government as being movers and shakers, shall we say. And so a lot of times when we'll be doing work, I'll see the remote viewer show up in the room. And we have dealt with at least one remote viewer personally as a client. But so I recognize the frequency when the remote viewers come in the room and they want to observe. And I welcome them. I say, that's fine, as long as you don't interfere in any way. I welcome them, and you're welcome to our techniques. But, you know, there's no copyright on universal information as far as I'm concerned. So come in and learn from us and take that back, because it's also my experience that, you know, 99% probably of governmental remote viewers who are not there of quote-unquote free will. I mean, on some level they've agreed, but, you know, from an outside standpoint, it looks like they're being coerced or co-opted to do that kind of work. And so we want them to break free. We want them to come into their own empowerment. So anything that we've got is free information, take it back into your system and create some change. And we have noticed and we have seen that when we work in that way, that it does create a difference within the systems.
Okay. Now, Robin, before we run out of time, you had mentioned that you do soul songs. We only have about 3.5 minutes left, so could you just maybe give a little sample of what a soul song may sound like?
Sure. Shall I do one for you, Nance?
Sure.
All right. And you said we have about 3 minutes before I have to say goodbye?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I'll just do a little prayer here.
Okay.
Mother, Father, God, and all that is, we open the sacred circle between Nancy and I and all that are listening to receive these frequencies through the sound field and to unify now with Nancy's desires to serve through love the awakening of humanity. Do not journey on your own anymore. Your friends are remembering. Well, you're not alone, Nancy.
That was very unique, and some, you know, people who may not have tuned in on time will hear that and they'll go, what in the world is she doing? But again, it's a soul song that Robin does, you know, to help people get through journeys. Now, again, give out your website and the phone numbers and how people can get a hold of you, please.
All righty. Once again, it's www.sustainablelove.biz, and for people who are spelling challenged, that's sustainablelove.biz. And our contact information is right there on the website. It's info Joseph or Robin at sustainablelove.biz. And it's Robin, R-O-B-I-N, and it's Joseph, spelled like Joseph. And a number to call us in Santa Fe is Robin's direct number, which is 505-920-3838.
you know, it's been a lot of fun having you on, and I really wanted Robin to see if we could get Gaia to come through, but we don't have enough time. So what we'll have to do is have the two of you come back onto another show, and then we'd love it.
That'd be fabulous.
More detail, and also, real quickly, you guys have got some things coming up that you're going to be doing along with your services. So, you know, maybe quickly tell people what you're going to be, you know, coming out with soon.
Well, one of the things we're going to be putting on the website is a weekly download. I'm going to be going into my channeled energy and looking at what people need to be supported in per week and giving information around personal healing and empowerment. We're also going to be doing groups in Santa Fe, a six-week group that people in this area can join in, as well as we are traveling, depending on the need and people's contacts, and doing groups and retreats in different places. We've been to Los Angeles. We'll probably go to Boulder pretty soon here and in Albuquerque. We don't have those dates set, but we do have a May date for a Santa Fe retreat. And we're really excited about that because this will be in the format of serving the intention of the group. So it's not, again, strictly planned. It's going to be based on what people come to heal with, what they really need to be supported in. And then we'll also be doing different lectures throughout this area that will be posted on our website.
But if somebody would like to invite us out and support us in that way, we'd love to come, wherever you are.
Good. I'm sure people need to know that. Again, you guys, it's been great having you on the show. A lot of good information, and we'll have to have you come back again so we can talk about the rest of it. But I would like to thank you for taking the time to be on the show.
Well, thank you, Nancy. It's always great talking with you and seeing you. We look forward to talking and seeing you soon.
You'll get your
chance. Thanks, Nan.
You're very welcome. You guys take care. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week. Take care, and we'll talk next time. Bye now.